This is the lecture for Biochem 421 for November
13, 2009. Ah, welcome to November. Let's see, what date is it?
13.
Ooh, and what day is it?
Friday.
Oh, yes. That's why I put the quiz up there. The focus is on enzyme catalysis. So while you're keeping one eye on the lecture and your one eye on reviewing for the quiz, you can focus specifically on what you need to do. Because I don't want any unhappy Friday the 13th surprises for you. So don't worry too much about hemoglobin. Worry primarily on enzyme catalysis. That's like the catalytic triad and little stuff along that, transition state analogs, this kind of a thing. So just trying to give you a hint so that you can find success today as we go through that little quiz we'll have at the end. All right. Well, I hope you can keep an eye on what we're going to be talking about today, because it is one of the most interesting mechanisms that occur in this whole process, in this whole class, is hemoglobin and its behavior in the blood and the relationship to the ions in the blood that enable it to keep you alive, despite the fact that your big toe is many feet away from its oxygen source. Last night, I took a long walk slash jog slash run. I am so physically out of condition that I can't run very far. And I mean, you can't run 5 miles? Can you run 2 miles? No, I mean, when I say I can't run very far, I say I can't run without really extreme pain more than 2 telephone poles. Okay? Because I'm not a runner. I've always been a sprinter, but I've never been a long-distance runner. but I'm starting to build that back up because I need to do that. At the end of this run is a short hill that goes up a bluff, and I run up that hill. And, of course, at the end of that hill, I'm going... The very bottoms of my lungs have gotten air they hadn't seen in years down there, okay? So they're going, what is this, fresh air? What? No! Anyway, so what was going on with all that? What was going on with that? Well, let's take a look at the model that's listed here. I got this model from the notes of a guy named Dr. Ralph Scorpio, who was a biochemist who retired, and I took his place. And this is an outstanding diagram that really beautifully shows the relationship of all the different allosteric effectors of hemoglobin. And once you get this idea in your mind and how it works, other allosteric effectors begin to have make a little more sense. But we're now talking about, let's see what's happening here. The CO2 from metabolism means this area is tissue. You can write in the word tissue here, and over here say lungs. Tissue and lungs. Tissue and lungs. You could say venous. You could say arterial if you wanted to. Venous and arterial. Capillaries and lungs, or whatever you want to say. So, obviously the tissue that's living is metabolizing reduced carbons and producing carbon dioxide. That's why they say from metabolism. The metabolism, that carbon dioxide then moves across the red blood cell membrane and moves into the red blood cell, where it's acted upon by something known as CA. Now, I think we mentioned that earlier. What was that CA? Carbonic anhydrase. And that goes right on top of the double-headed arrow that between carbon dioxide and water and the carbonic acid. It makes that carbonic acid. Our carbonic acid immediately, spontaneously breaks down to form what?
Bicarbonate.
Yeah, bicarbonate and hydrogen ion. Now, let's take a look at what happens to the two products of that breakdown. And we'll start first with the bicarbonate. The bicarbonate actually begins to build up in the red blood cell, And if that built up, it would eventually prevent this reaction from occurring, or a reverse reaction would occur, and you would not capture any carbon dioxide as bicarbonate. So what happens is that bicarbonate then actually moves outside of the red blood cell. And so if I was going to draw this, you've got something that looks like this. HCO3 minus, and you got HCO3 minus, and I'm just reproducing the diagram that's there. It's the bicarbonate going out and the chloride going in. This is actually a single protein. It is a antiport. What does that mean, an antiport? Right. It's passive, which means what? No ATP, but that means it's simply these ions move based exclusively on what? Concentration gradient. That's correct. Antiport passive. It's called anion. I think it's either anion transport protein. I can't believe all of a sudden I've forgotten this. Or exchange, anion exchange protein. It's so this is a single protein that either is called anion transport protein or anion exchange protein. It's the same idea. These are both anions. And so by allowing the bicarbonate to go out and chloride to come in, the overall net electronic charge balance of the red blood cell maintains the equilibrium, neutrality. But notice what happens. The bicarbonate leaves and chloride is brought in. So now let's take a look exactly at what's at high concentration in the red blood cell. In the red blood cell in the tissue. We have a high concentration of hydrogen. Is that correct? Say yes.
Yes.
We have a relatively high concentration of chloride ion. Is that correct? Say yes. Yes. We have a high concentration of carbon dioxide. Is that correct? Yes. And so there also is a small molecule in there called what? 2,3-bisphosphoglycerate. 2,3-BPG or just BPG? And what is the role, actually, of each of these? What happens with the carbon dioxide? What does the hydrogen ion do? What does the carbon dioxide do that's linked? Where does the carbon dioxide, it actually covalently attaches. Where does it covalently attach? You remember where it covalently attaches? N-termini. So there's four carbon dioxides that can bind at a maximum there. And then the chloride also binds to some of the salts, some of the opposite positive charges that are on the surface of the cell. Each of those stabilize what form of the hemoglobin? The oxy form or the deoxy form? Deoxy form. Is that the form you want stabilized in the tissue? Does that make sense to stabilize the deoxy form in the tissue? Yes, because notice the process of hemoglobin having oxygen bound to it and having oxygen released is in fact an equilibrium process. But the presence of carbon dioxide, BPG, hydrogen ion, and chloride, it favors the deoxy form, which then means the oxygen is being pushed what? Or encouraged to do what? Release, be released. Please release me, let me go. Da 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 da. Something like that. Anyway, an old country and western song. If you remember hearing it,
my mom used to sing it.
Really? I'm eliminating that from my song. What? Yeah. I claim that I'm kind of like a broken iPod. In the fact, have I told you this before? I have fragments of about 4,000 songs in my head, and they just pop up randomly. I don't know the whole song. I just know the particular phrases of it. All right, well, back to this particular song or oratorio here. So carbon dioxide, the deoxy form is stabilized, oxygen is released. Now, that red blood cell then travels from your big toe up to where?
Your lungs.
where the concentration of oxygen is at a high level relative to the proportion, relative to the whole rate here. So now the red blood cells in the lungs. Now let's take a look at what's here. What's missing? We got carbon dioxide attached to hemoglobin, we got hydrogen attached to hemoglobin, the BPG attached to hemoglobin. What small molecule is not attached to the hemoglobin that it should be there? Chlorine. Put Cl minus there. Don't say chlorine either. Say chloride. Chloride ion. Which reminds Britt, Miss Foster, don't forget to talk to me after this class, about this afternoon. Excellent. All right, so we got four things here. That's the deoxy form. High concentrations of oxygen come in, literally overwhelming the binding of these four things. And now you get oxygenated hemoglobin, you get free BPG, you get free hydrogen ion, you get free carbon dioxide. Guess what happens to the carbon dioxide? You breathe it out. Yes, indeed. Then what happens to this hydrogen ion? And I can't show you, but I'd like for you to, because I don't have my power cord here, and I've turned off my screen, so I'm not going to fiddle around with it. You see the hydrogen that's right here, and you got a chloride coverage. What I want you to do is draw an arrow over here and point at this hydrogen right here, and put a plus sign next to it. Okay, so what I've written here is I've drawn a line that says you draw a line from the hydrogen ion at that top line down to the hydrogen ion next to the bicarbonate. And then the hydrogen ion and the bicarbonate get together to form carbonic acid. And the carbonic acid spontaneously broken down by carbonic anhydrase to form carbon dioxide and water. And what happens to the carbon dioxide? It also does what? It leaves. It gets expelled. But where does this bicarbonate come from? Where's that bicarbonate come from? From the plasma. But that's got to be imported into the red blood cell. How does that happen? What? You said permeases. Well, that's one way of looking at it. It's the same anion transport protein. But this time, guess what happens? The chloride ion concentration is reversed. Notice what I said, there was chloride ion in here. What's free after the reaction? What's free after oxygen binds to it? What gets free? Let's review again. When oxygen binds to the fully deoxygenated hemoglobin, you release BPG, hydrogen ion, carbon dioxide, and you release one other ion. What is it? Chloride. So actually, if you don't mind, you should probably put a chloride right here at the end. Put a little plus Cl. That Cl then comes all the way over here. Gets a high concentration of it occurs. It goes out of the red blood cell, and it brings in bicarbonate that binds with the hydrogen ion, that makes a carbonic acid, that makes the hydrogen and water and carbon dioxide and releases it. Woohoo! Happens every day, every instant of every day that you're alive. Now, any questions about how this model works, ladies and gentlemen? Any question at all? Excellent. Now, let's take a look at BPG. Four substances modulate hemoglobin binding properties. BPG, altitude adaptation. Carbon dioxide, hydrogen ion, and chloride. Okay? Fetal hemoglobin has a low BPG affinity. Why would that be advantageous? All right. Now, let's see here. All right. Now, let's take a look at BPG. BPG is a small molecule that exists in the red blood cell whose concentration there varies with, hold on for it, the altitude, and is an adaptation for moving from low altitude to high altitude. let's take a look at this little diagram right here. Here is sea level, right here. And notice here the BPV concentration in micrograms of phosphorus per mil of blood, whatever. At any rate, so fairly, it's about here, about between 30 and 31 micrograms per mil at day zero. You move up to 4,500 meters above sea level. That's about where there are two capital cities in, is it Bolivia or is it Peru? I think it's Bolivia, has two capital cities, doesn't it? There's one near the ocean and one up in the altitude. This is the capital city, about the same altitude as the capital city of Bolivia. That's high altitude. Was it summer capital or whatever? And so as you move as a normal human, normalized to sea level, if you move up to high altitude, the BPT concentration in your blood rises. And will stay that way as long as you're there. If you then move back down to sea level, the BPG concentration drops and so does the P50. What's the logic whereby the BPG concentration increases? Why would that help adapt you to high altitude? What would that do? Well, let's see here. Let's come to think of it. All right, let's see here. Notice what this is right here. You got hemoglobin and carbon dioxide, and the red blood and the oxygen binding curve is shifted to the left a little bit. But if I simply added BPG to this, notice how much more that's going to shift to the right. And having BPG in the blood means you're going to deliver more oxygen. What did I say? Having more BPG means you're going to deliver more oxygen because the oxygen binding curve shifts to the right. It helps force the oxygen off of the hemoglobin by stabilizing the deoxyform. You stabilize the deoxyform, oxygen falls off and stays off. You stabilize more of the oxygen form, you stabilize more of the deoxyform with higher BPG, more of it's going to fall off. So you transport more oxygen with BPG increased level. Yes?
Isn't the problem oxygen capture, not oxygen delivery?
Nope. Nope. La dee 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 dee. Ah, let's go to that one. Okay. Let's see here. Let's just pretend. Let's see. Well, I shouldn't say no, but that's not the primary issue. If capturing carbon dioxide was the primary issue, then changing the BPG level would have no effect on it whatsoever. There would be no need to adapt for it. About 4,300 meters. You'll forgive me if that's about, well, that's way up there. That's 14,000 feet. Does anybody know at what altitude half of the atmosphere is below you? What altitude is half the atmosphere below you? Turns out 12,000 feet is half the ATM is below you. So when you're up at 14,000 feet there, climbing around in Colorado, okay, you got half the oxygen concentration that you would at sea level. Not what you're going to have at Denver, but half at sea level. So But that still means that see, the arterial PO2 is the actual concentration of the blood in the arteries. The concentration, I don't know. Let's see. We know that the atmosphere is about 20% oxygen. There at sea level, that's 760 torr. There is a direct relationship, a summed relationship between the percentage and the pressure. So 20% of 760 is 760 torr. I mean, times 760 times 0.2. 0.2, we get 0, 2, carry 1. So it's about 152 torr is the oxygen in your lungs at sea level. At 12,000 feet, that would be about, what, 75 torr? No. Yeah, 75 torr. So if we move this down, let's just say that the arterial is about 60. And let's take a look at normal blood. That would be this one right here. Okay. So you would go up to about there. Well, 7-4, I'm sorry. 7-4 is this line, is a green line, isn't it? Yeah, 7-4 is a green line. So at 70 torr, you're still, even at 60 torr in the lungs, you're still binding what percentage of the oxygen? 93%. All right? Now, there is, but that's still significant, it's still less, measurably less than at, than at sea level. So you are finding some decrease, but if you shift this curve to the right by increasing the BPG, you're going to find that you're going to be delivering a lot more oxygen than you're losing due to the altitude difference. Does that make any sense at all?
You'd be decreasing oxygen.
Right. Well, yes, a little. Yes, you probably would be. That's an interesting question. Nevertheless, you can see the changing of the rate of change is much greater here at low oxygen tensions than at high oxygen tensions. And therefore, the impact would primarily be, once again, on delivery. But there's no doubt you have less oxygen there. Absolutely. And you're going to have a lower percentage of pickup, or else you wouldn't have any trouble at all. But it's surprisingly how much excess oxygen you have in your lungs at sea level compared to high altitudes. All right. Good question. So why do all of our athletes typically train in Colorado? There's a big Olympic complex in Boulder, Colorado. Why do you think they practice in Boulder, Colorado? High altitude, and you get that high altitude adaptation, which increases the BPG. It also, that's one doping they can't detect, by the way. If you inject yourself with BPG prior to an event, they can't detect that. But it's also very, very temporary. What? Yes, yes indeed. We are a full value biochemistry class, exactly. So full value for your tuition dollar. Now, fetal hemoglobin has a low BPG affinity. Why would that be advantageous? Because it'll be easier for it to capture oxygen. Remember, BPG stabilizes the deoxyform, which implies it makes it harder for the oxygen to get on. Well, that's not a problem for an adult where there's such an excess of oxygen in the lungs. The excess oxygen in the lungs can force that right off. But But babies don't have a lung that's getting that high concentration of oxygen. They have a relatively low oxygen tension at the placenta level. And so the fetal hemoglobin is not quite as resistant to getting to binding oxygen as normal adult hemoglobin. Answer me this. Turn to a neighbor. Literally. And talk about this question. Be prepared to answer it in class today. Literally. How would the effectiveness of oxygen transport be affected, if at all, and under what circumstances, if carbonic anhydrase in the red blood cell was mutated to become inactive? Explain your reasoning. All right, let's go back here. Go back here. Notice I said carbonic anhydrase right here. Carbonic anhydrase right here. You had a genetic problem, or you took a drug that binds carbonic anhydrase and makes it ineffective. How's it going to affect your oxygen transport? Going to make it easier or harder or no effect, and why? How are you doing today? Good, good. Oh no, why is he asking? What's going on? Oh no, oh no! Good, because I was actually going to call on you guys. Yes, I was. Yeah. Now, how do you pronounce your first name again?
Wojtek.
What?
Wojtek.
Wojtek. Wojtek. You know, that sounds like a high-tech company, you know. Buy your circuit boards from Wojtek. Or Vortex engine, that's exactly correct. Why does a Vortex engine work at all? What's the whole idea behind a Vortex engine? Well, by mixing the air-fuel mixture more effectively, you get a better explosion. All right. Well, I'm going to pick on Wojtek and Ms. Markovic to tell us, in their informed opinion, what would happen to the carbonic anhydrase, what would happen to the oxygen transport, that means both the pickup and delivery, if carbonic anhydrase were inactivated for some reason. Go for it. Nice and loud. Be brave. Right.
Carbon ion does not form, you have high levels of CO2 in the blood when you have acidosis.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Acidosis. Well, that's probably true. Or would it? I mean, it's a great idea. Not making adenylate cyclase, I mean, not having carbonic anhydrase, you say would not form the carbon dioxide and water, and therefore you'd have high levels of bicarbonate and high levels of hydrogen ion. That's what you said?
On which end?
Yes, on which end? That's exactly correct. There's two ends to this equation. That's right. Yeah. You're absolutely right. Without having the carbonic anhydrase, let's start at this end. Without having the carbonic anhydrase, the reaction of carbon dioxide and water would be much, much, much slower, right? Because the carbonic anhydrase speeds this up. So you would begin to have a buildup of carbon dioxide, which, I don't know, it may hinder some things. But actually what's going on here, without that adenylate cyclase, I keep saying adenylate cyclase, carbonic anhydrase, thank you, you do not make appreciable amounts of that, which means you don't make appreciable amounts of bicarbonate, nor of hydrogen ion. that hydrogen ion production slows dramatically, at least inside the red blood cell. Now, if you slow down the production of hydrogen ion in the red blood cell, are you going to help stabilize or not help stabilize the deoxyform? Right. Without that hydrogen ion there, you're not going to stabilize the deoxyform. Therefore, the amount of oxygen being delivered, is that going to go up or going to go down?
Down.
Another effect is, without the bicarbonate being formed and the mass action of excess bicarbonate moving out and chloride moving in, you again have the situation where you would have relatively low levels of chloride, which again stabilizes the deoxyform, and therefore you would again have the situation where you would not stabilize it. Now, that's counteracted by the fact you would have excess levels of carbon dioxide, which, as you know, in part stabilizes the deoxyform. But there's always excess amounts of carbon dioxide. The carbonic anhydrase does not convert every carbon dioxide into bicarbonate. So the net effect of this overall is going to be a lowered level of release of carbon dioxide. What about here on the reverse end? Well, you got the oxygen coming in, you got the carbon dioxide coming off. But again, you then, assuming you probably don't have as much hydrogen ion there, but this whole reaction at this point is going to be slowed, which means that this is going to remain at high levels. This is going to remain at high levels. And you're going to, again, favor the deoxyform even in the presence of excess oxygen. You probably could live without carbonic anhydrase, but you would not be able to do much. Your ability to transport oxygen would be severely limited, and you would not certainly be able to do any adaptable running. You couldn't run anywhere. You could at best move, because you couldn't adapt. All right. Da, da, da. Doom, 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 doom. Sickle cell anemia, ladies and gentlemen. I know of a young man who is very, very, very sick. I've had him visit in a hospital many times. He's not a student here anymore. He just could not manage college and have sickle cell anemia. He kept having these horrible attacks. He would spend literally weeks in the hospital trying to overcome a sickle cell anemia attack. He's a homozygous for the sickle cell gene. So, about 10% of black Americans are heterozygous for hemoglobin HBS, standing for the sickle cell. 25% of black Africans are heterozygous. You get two of them together, and you have a dramatic increase in having sickle cell anemia as a homozygous situation. What happens is that homozygous carriers suffer painful and debilitating blood clots, even death. The average age of a sickle cell anemia victim, the age of death is about between 35 and 40. And it's not the clotting that necessarily gets them. It's the infections that arise from having poor circulation in their joints and limbs. They're constantly battling of infections because, of course, oxygen is an excellent antiseptic, as it were, but having poor circulation due to these microscopic clots in the capillaries, you just can't get the antibodies in there to help these infections. All right, the interesting thing, here is the molecular reason for sickle cell anemia. There is a single, There is a single problem, and that is, I want to make sure. Okay. Now, I'm going to go ahead. I want you to note, there's a hydrophobic vowel side chain at position B6. The hydrophobic vowel position at B6. Now, what does that B6 mean? What am I saying B6? That could be a capital B. B6 on an alpha chain. Or beta chain. Beta chains. position B6. That probably means it is on, again, the beta chain, position 6, that's just right at the end, right at the nitrogen end. This is the diseased condition. The val is the diseased condition. The normal amino acid that's supposed to be there is glutamic acid. Glutamic acid. So sickle cell anemia is a genetic point mutation, as it were, in the hemoglobin beta primary sequence, in which at the sixth position, a glutamic acid is replaced with a valine. Now, you could imagine the water solubility difference between a glutamic acid and a valine. Is that correct? The glutamic acid is much more water soluble than the valine. That's not the only problem. That particular position actually creates a tab and slot problem in the deoxy form. Remember I said there was a difference in 15 degrees in shifting between the oxy form and the deoxy form? The oxy form is closed and then it opens 15 degrees and in the oxy form? Well, in that deoxy form, there is a perfect tab and slot, where the tab is that valine that sticks out, and a slot is a hydrophobic cleft that's normally hidden in the oxy form. What did I just say? The hydrophobic cleft is normally hidden in the what? Oxy form, but exposed in the deoxy form. Okay. Now, so you can see here where in the beta forms, so there's that valine that's sticking out and that pocket, a hydrophobic pocket sits there. And as the combination of oxy and deoxy form create they end up creating, I don't know why this is pink, I think it's all deoxy form. They create these long strings, these long threads of insoluble deoxyhemoglobin. Insoluble deoxy HBS in this case. And they begin to precipitate in long needle-like threads. I mean, it's just vicious if you look at it, and you can see it right here. Those threads precipitate as needles. So that little needle may contain dozens and dozens of these kinds of threads all linked together. And that sickle cell red blood cell is completely filled, as it were, with needles. That distorts the beautiful semi-donut shape of the red blood cell and forms it into the classic shape of a red blood cell of a victim of that's going through an episode in which this becomes a sickle shape. Due to these long threads that are in there. And with those needle-like, as you can tell, what happens? It breaks the red blood cell very easily. Those needles form only in the what form of hemoglobin? Deoxy. The oxy form is soluble. If you are in an ER and you see a sickle cell patient come in having an episode, an acute attack, if your hospital has one, they send them to a hyperbaric chamber. Why? What does a hyperbaric chamber do? Forces oxygen into the tissues without the use of the lungs. And so you have beds of capillaries around your joints that are, of course, there's beds all throughout here, but for some reason the joints are particularly susceptible. And these networks of capillaries that are in here. And what happens is a sufferer has an episode and a capillary gets blocked. a capillary gets blocked by this sickle cell because the sickle cell can't bend. And the capillaries, the true capillary beds, are about the size of a red blood cell and sometimes even smaller. And that blocks that capillary. Well, what happens if that capillary is blocked? What happens to the oxygen concentration around that capillary? It goes down. What does that do to the red blood cells behind it? They start what? The hemoglobin in that region begins to what? Also become deoxygenated and then form what? Clots. And so a small clot, without anything you can do about it, a small clot then becomes a what? Big clot. And that big clot causes pain. And that big clot causes poor circulation. Opportunistic bacteria begin to act. And you get these horrible long-term infections in those joints and stuff. Okay. So, val is substituted with glutamic at A3-6 in the beta. Creates an external hydrophobic region, fits a pocket on the adjacent hemoglobin tetramer. Nucleation is slow, but the rapid polymerization is, subsequent polymerization is rapid. And we've got to be done because we've got a little quiz here. And I'm going to be giving it out to you. Yes, I did remember. And thank you so much for reminding me. Yeah, you were talking. Yeah, well, because of this, I'm going to make you take this anyway. I don't care if you're late for your next test, next class anyway. Okay, let's go. Put your stuff up. Move out of the way. Okay. You got to move out of the way. You guys being mean to me again. All right. Not letting me know. Not reminding me. So I'm going to make you take this quiz anyway. Could you pass it across the way there? You pass it across. I'm going to give you three of them. Okay, thank you. All right. Very straightforward little quiz. Okay. All right. And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. If you could quickly pass those away down there. 1, 2, 3. I can just hand these to you. Sorry. Oop. Go. Here you go. Here you go. Here you go. Thank you.